Special guest for the 5 o'clock hour, the voice of the BYU Cougars on the Cougar IMG Sports Network, the professional, the Canuck of the Cougars, Greg Rebell. Greg, how you doing?
Benjamin, Darnell, how's it going, eh?
Beauty.
Oh, it's so good. What's your favorite Canadian candy bar? My good friend Zach Hicken, who is also a Canuck, wanted me to ask you.
Crunchy, undisputed champ.
Crunchy, undisputed champ. He just shakes his head in agreeance. Magical. Greg, as you reflect on this year's BYU men's basketball team, what they were able to accomplish, what will you remember most and cherish, and what should BYU fans remember and cherish the most?
Well, first and foremost, I think it's most important to you know, acknowledge that any season that ends as an at-large pick in the NCAA tournament has to be considered a success. And where BYU was leaving Malibu in early February at fourth place in the West Coast Conference, seemingly with only an outside shot to make it to the NCAA tournament, what Dave Rose's team did down the stretch to get them to where they ultimately got is a notable achievement. Winning in Spokane is the high point of the season. Clearly, that gets them into the NCAA tournament. It's so hard to have your last memory, be the lost lead against Ole Miss in a bracket that kind of opened up perhaps on the weekend. That's really tough. But ultimately, to be a 25-win team, dancing again as an at-large, you have to look at that as a successful season, a history-making season, too, between Tyler Hawes and Kyle Collinsworth's accomplishments. And again, it's just tough to not be still playing at this point, the way things ended. But big-picture perspective, kudos to the Cougars.
What's your favorite memory from this season, Greg?
Winning in Spokane. I mean, it just you have to kind of start and stop right there. No one in college basketball had done it in years. No one in the West Coast Conference had done it since BYU joined the league. And so I think to further kind of put the stamp on a budding rivalry, a win was kind of needed there to say we're in this thing from a BYU perspective. And that's what they did. And I think while I was prepared to make the argument that that even without a win on that night, they could still have a case, the way things turned out, they probably didn't with the committee. That win got BYU into the NCAA tournament. And, this is kind of something that Dave Rose and his teams have kind of specialized in doing, needing to do certain things down the stretch to make it. They've made it in eight of the last 9 years.
Greg, I haven't had a chance to talk to you since that night in Dayton where we watched that second half issue. In your opinion, and I don't know if you can put it on one specific aspect of BYU's defense, but what really broke down there in the second half? Because I keep going back to the number 62 and allowing 62 points. It doesn't seem like a team that's good as BYU is should be giving up 62 points and a half. What went wrong in that second half?
Well, I think what it became hard to do was defend turnovers. And there were too many times when BYU was simply giving the ball away for fast breaks at the other end. And that's a little atypical. It's one thing to struggle a bit, defensively, but it's another thing to have to defend sudden turn plays and sudden change, fast break turnovers. That's what BYU was doing over and over again in the second half. That, to me, was the biggest challenge, beyond the fact that the turnovers resulted in empty possessions. Ole Miss ends up with as fast as BYU plays and as aggressive as BYU plays, to see a team take 22 more shots than BYU is almost an inconceivable number. And of course, the turnover number directly results in that disparity. And that just, again, Darnell, we've covered this team a long time. A 25-0 points off of turnovers disparity. I can't recall a game like that. Certainly not in that kind of setting, where things went that that wayward one way that heavily, and ultimately that was it to me. It was defending fast breaks and 25 zipping points off of turnovers. Clearly there were rebounding issues. Plus 10 for Ole Miss on the offensive glass, second chance points at plus 12. The paint, Ole Miss dominated, but that's something that BYU's been dealt with throughout the course of the year. But if the rebounding numbers go in the wrong way, that hasn't been a good sign for BYU this season. It wasn't on that night. And it was just a strange night for Kyle Collinsworth. It was a 1-for-7 shooting night. It was a night with foul trouble, and he never got into a flow. And it seemed like when he was sitting, BYU struggled the most. And I'm convinced that if Kyle had an average night for BYU, they would have been okay. If he could have avoided getting in first half foul trouble, I think BYU would have been okay. If he could have, not followed up that Skylar Halford three with his fourth foul in the second half, I think BYU would have been okay. those are a lot of, I think, BYU would have beens, but I think they all actually come back to the fact that he's such an important player for BYU, and when he's not in there or dealing with those issues that he was, BYU was just a little bit off, or just enough off that night to lose by four.
And Greg, I also think that the foul trouble with Corbin Cafusi made a big difference too. One of the statements that Andy Kennedy made in the postgame was his team was 4-for-17 from inside the paint in the first half. Now, they missed some probably ones they could have made, but I think the presence of Corbin in that first half probably created some of those misses as well. And when he got in foul trouble, he couldn't be as aggressive in defending that. And I think that kind of the steamroll thing that happened in the second half was part of that as well.
Also a factor, he ends up fouling out. And I think if you look at his last five or six games of the season, I think they would have all ended with him at four or five fouls.
Yeah, definitely.
Gregor Bell from the Cougar IMG Sports Network on with us here, Cougar Sports ESPN 960. You were on the floor, Greg. What did you think about the fouls that were called on Kyle? Was he being overly aggressive? Were they ticky-tack?
Well, you know, you can parse any number of fouls in any given game. I thought the fourth foul was probably not one you want to give the ref an excuse to call. If you're trying to stay on the floor and your team needs you that badly, you know, making a backcourt foul on kind of you're trying to reach in and maybe get a steal after you just made a big three-pointer. I see Kyle's trying to continue momentum, but, you know, Skylar makes a big three to make it a nine-point game, as I recall, and he's reaching and a kind of a hip check on the sideline. You just hate to have that be the one. What I thought was most interesting was that in the first half, I think BYU's first four turnovers were all offensive fouls. I think there came a point where every foul that BYU had came on the offensive end, which is very unusual. And that's where BYU was. And again, those are empty possessions and don't reward aggressiveness necessarily. And so I thought that was a unique aspect to the game as well. I think in the end, Kyle probably needed to be, just a little more cautious, a little more mindful of just, you know, the necessity of staying on the floor in that kind of game, because it really did go that way. Well, once he got his fourth foul and took a seat, that lead went from 9-2 in a heartbeat, and it was, three turnovers in the next four possessions with Kyle on the bench. It was just that sudden, and Dave had to bring him back in. That thing went from 9-2, and after like about maybe a minute and a half, 2 minutes on the bench, Kyle was back in with those four fouls. That's how much he meant to that team that night, I thought.
Greg, with BYU losing, how invested are you still in March Madness, despite the Cougs not being in the tourney now?
It's, you know, it's hard in a way to keep watch to get, you know, too invested in the games. It's because you want to still be playing, calling games. You want to be in the thing. I hadn't filled out a bracket until BYU lost. Once they lost, I came back to town and actually filled one out. And into my bracket, I've got the Zags going all the way. And I don't think that's too implausible the way they're playing right now. I'll be curious to see what they do on this weekend. They'll get UCLA and either Duke or Utah if they keep winning. That'll be a fun group to get out of in Houston. But yeah, I mean, it's this is where you want to be, and it's where they got to. And when you see the bracket open up a little bit, you think, wow, you know, what could have been. But that's the beauty of this game and this tournament. It's a 40-minute experience for every team, and the best team doesn't always make it out of its given matchup. And that's what happened to BYU this time around. And it's a hard one to swallow, but you know, with time, it's a little easier to accept, and you carry on.
You're one of the few people that can talk about this particular subject credibly, I think. And Gonzaga went out last year early, a disappointment. They were number one seed. Two years ago. Do you think that this year's team, this year's Zags team, is better than that team from 2 years ago?
I think it could be, really. Better than the one seed team of a couple of years ago. And really, that was that was kind of a surreal experience for Gonzaga, too. I think the way that BYU's game got away against Ole Miss, Gonzaga has to kind of feel like they were in a twilight zone against Wichita State that night. I think the Shockers hit their last seven threes, if I'm not mistaken. They hit 14 that night, which I think was their highest total in a single game in 10 years. So it was one of those, again, once-in-a-decade type of experiences to lose a game like that, like Gonzaga did. It had to be crushing for them. And while the stakes weren't the same, and BYU wasn't a one seed, and they weren't playing to get out of that first weekend, it was still a very hard way, you know, to be escorted home. But I think that the team Gonzaga puts out there this year is better than 2 years ago. I think they're a little deeper, especially up front. And with Kevin Pangos being a senior and not a sophomore, I think that makes a big difference as well.
Who do they meet with in the championship, Greg?
Kentucky.
And you have them beating Kentucky? Is that what you said?
WCC, represent.
Love it. I love the optimism. Greg Rebell, voice of the Cougars, on with us here, Cougar Sports ESPN 960. What's up next for this BYU basketball team? How will the Annex help in recruiting? And what do you think about the incoming talent for next year's team?
Well, I'm really excited, and as excited as you can be after losing someone like Tyler Hawes. I mean, there's an element of taking his talent for granted that I think won't really be in play until you're looking for that, you know, where's the guy that's going to score 25 every night? I mean, is that guy going to be on next year's team? I don't know, but I do know that what Tyler Hawes did over the last three seasons is exceptional and unusual and remarkable, and BYU will miss him sorely from next year's team. It really is amazing when you think about how consistent he was, night in, night out, feeling good, not feeling good, just ticking off those point totals without really, you know, you can count his bad nights on a single hand. And his good nights were all so good. It's going to be a hard thing to play without Tyler Hawes. But I get extreme. And you know, Anson Weiner, we haven't talked a lot about or at all at this point. The way his season ended was sad for him and for BYU. I think he was a really missing ingredient for BYU down the stretch in the postseason. The way his season his body kind of gave out on him toward the end. Such a battler for that team over five seasons because he was a redshirt back in the day. And so, you know, with Tyler and Anson, Skylar Halford, huge for BYU in league play, and Josh Sharp, that's a pretty sizable void off of this year's team. But, you know, I get equally excited for Kyle Davis, who I've seen practice all year. I think Kyle Davis is going to bring not only a lot of skill to the front court, but a lot of vinegar, too. I think he's really going to bring that team an attitude and may find himself to be a burr under the saddle of more than a couple of teams in this conference moving forward. I love Kyle Davis and the way he plays. Jamal Aites finally becomes healthy enough to play and maybe up to three seasons for BYU. That's exciting to me. Nick Emery, who I've seen practice again a little bit since he's been back, you know, he could be the guy that that occupies or helps to fill that Tyler Hawes role. Nick can be just that, you know, that explosive a player. And Zach Selyus, how much can you expect from another high school freshman? But he seems to be a guy, too, that can kind of light it up. And so all these reasons and more, I think BYU can replace what they're losing with some, sizable talent, considerable talent, and no reason to expect there should be a considerable drop-off. I think you could say in a lot of ways next year's team could be more complete than this year's squad, even without somebody as impressive as Tyler Hawes.
Yeah, and Greg, I also think one of the things that we talked to Dave Rose a lot this year about the four-guard lineup and how they reinvented themselves several times. The team on the floor at the end of the season wasn't the one he expected to put on the floor at the beginning. And I think we're going to see, as you mentioned, a guy like Kyle Davis or Jamal Aites, both those guys are going to create a very different kind of offense that still will score a lot of points, but they're going to get their points in a lot of different ways. Do you think that fans really can appreciate how that's going to change maybe next year?
I hope so, and I think that Corbin Kafusi, Darnell, will have an entire offseason of preparation. He can refine his game, which was developing very well toward the end of the season. I think just with those names alone, Nate Austin comes back into the mix. Jacob Hartsock, I don't know what to expect from him yet, but you've got four or five, Isaac Nielsen, six guys back able to give Dave Rose different options in a front court that simply was so thin this year and was relying on simply, basically one walk-on center to start, for his team in the NCAA tournament. A walk-on center and a four-man who really wasn't giving you a lot offensively. And so his look changes considerably from this year to next year. And Dave Rose has always been a coach who likes to work from the inside out. People think that he's, I know some people think that he's, simply a run-and-gun, three-point shooting type of coach, but ultimately he wants to work from the inside out. And he's had years, consecutive years, where he's got a starting post scorer in double figures. It's Trent Plaisted, or it's Brandon Davies, or it's Eric Mika. He likes to work with those kinds of guys. Inside out is the way he likes to play. And he's of his 10 seasons, he's only had three where that really hasn't been the case where you've had a really go-to post scorer, the Chris Miles years, and this past year when Austin and Jamal Aites were out and they had to go with Worthington and Kafusi in the post.
Greg, ESPN did a nice article on mid-major prospects, looking like sleepers, looking to maybe get drafted this year. Kyle Collinsworth was among those. How serious do you think Kyle Collinsworth is looking at his possibility of being a draft pick coming up here pretty soon?
Well, I'm sure that when it comes to BYU players, most players who are return missionaries and have gone through a junior year are probably looking at the age factor and saying, you know, will I be as marketable next year as I am right now? But I think in Kyle Collinsworth's case, the answer is he can make himself considerably more marketable by playing another season. I hope that would be his decision, obviously. I think there are many things he can still add to his game and could really have an All-America-type season next year. I think from the get-go, he'll be somebody with a lot of attention on him, and I would hope that's his plan. I haven't heard anything to the contrary. I know that there are some assessments of his game, like you've just noted, but I would hope that Kyle looks at the ability to add a few more elements and aspects to his game and realizing next year could be a special year, maybe even a better year for both him and the team, and then come back and give it one more go. I think he could benefit, and certainly the team would benefit.
He'll definitely draw the best defender this next year, whereas Tyler Haws was drawing that best defender this year. How will that affect Kyle, do you think?
Well, I really think that you can't just focus on Kyle Collinsworth. I think if you have Kyle Collinsworth, Nick Emery, and Chase Fisher on the floor together with Kyle Davis, take your pick. I mean, you're looking at a pretty sizable portion of offensive talent out there, and I think that's kind of the beauty of this year's BYU team and will be again next year. You really can't sell out on just one guy. And I think, Kyle and Tyler, both drew a considerable amount of attention. I think Chase Fisher becomes that X-factor guy as he was this past season. That's why he had so many big games. I think he's just that good to where he can really make you pay if you have to shade a little bit toward either of those two guys. But I think the same problem exists next year because I think BYU's offensive talent between Celius and Emery and Fisher and Collinsworth and Davis is going to be just as formidable, if not more so.
Potential offensive output from this basketball team next year. You've mentioned Kyle Davis on a number of occasions. It seems like you're extremely high on this young man. Potential double-double every single night. What type of athleticism does he bring to the floor?
Well, I don't know if it's as much athleticism as it is skill and craftiness and attitude. And I think those are all really important elements to have in a post player. He's super skilled, has an array of moves that he's been able to refine and work on over this last year. And beyond that, it's just it's something you can't necessarily define quantitatively, but he's got a great element of tenacity to his presence. He's very fiery out there. And I think that's going to be something that was maybe, I'm not going to say lacking, but you'll notice it much more next year when Kyle is on the floor. And that's going to truly, I think, benefit BYU and their front court presence. I'm just really sold on his style of play. And Jamal Ates, who didn't get to play this year, is very skilled from 15 feet in and even pushing his range out a little bit. Love the way he shoots, big hands, soft hands, great handler in the post. Just excited to see what he can do once he gets on the floor and is able to go full go as he never was this past season. And so, again, I'm just super excited about what the next season brings with those two guys alone.
Any potential changes within the Cougar coaching staff on this basketball team?
I know that Mark Pope's name's being associated with the UVU opening, and I'm sure there's been some conversation there. But beyond that, every offseason brings with it that element of the unknown, and BYU's been relatively consistent the last couple of years. But it's something that I think head coaches have come to expect and always have something kind of ready to go in case. And we'll see which coaches are thinking that way as we move along. But I really don't know beyond what everyone already knows about Mark Pope is out there.
Tyler Haws is also going to be training pretty hard coming up for his pro opportunity. What will he need to work on, in your opinion, to showcase his best skills and talents in order to get drafted?
Well, I think if you look at the top 20 scorers in NCAA career history, you're going to find a lot of guys who played professionally, and Ty's now in that group. And so he certainly merits the attention that his kind of numbers will bring him. And, the NBA has become less of a league that cherishes or prizes his particular skill set, speaking of the mid-range game. A lot of it is paint and perimeter play, and that's, Tyler certainly took enough threes and gotten better at it and as part of his game and certainly can drive and even post up a little bit, but his strength is cutting and curling and shooting mid-range jump shots. We'll see just which teams out there really value that skill, because it is a valuable skill. And again, you just can't score almost 2,800 points and not have talent that merits attention at the next level. And so I'm going into it completely wide open relative to expectations and anticipations and seeing what comes of somebody with formidable talent. We'll just see who values it most.
Greg, Friday Night Lights coming up on, Friday, apparently. BYU football with a scrimmage and a little fan clinic. What are you most looking forward to seeing from that evening of Cougar football?
Well, I'm not looking for BYU's next star quarterback. I know that.
Their last one, maybe, but
because he's not playing on Friday. It'll be funny to see guys out there that aren't going to be in the mix at quarterback in the fall. But I lessen expectations for the spring game because the coaches have already kind of set the table going in relative to kind of lowering the bar. Treating it more like a night for the fans, conceding ahead of time that a lot of players will be sitting this one out. I don't know if half the players who will start on opening day would be expected to see the field on Friday night. I don't know if that's an accurate number or not, but it'll probably be pretty close. That's the kind of night it usually is. They'll be very cautious and very careful and err on the side of prudence relative to the guys who are recovering from injuries, and they don't want to see get any more risk of harm to their bodies. And so, again, I look at it as hopefully an hour and X number of plays of where you can see some twos and threes that when they show up in August go, yeah, I remember he had a pretty good spring game. But Bronco, I think, himself used the phrase today, speaking of spring, it doesn't mean a thing, meaning what the offense and defense are doing right now doesn't matter to him from a standpoint of, who's better right now, the O or the D. And so that's, you have to understand, that's kind of the way the coaches, do look at this in a lot of ways.
Greg, I know there's mixed opinions out there on the return of Christian Stewart and the reps that he's getting with in team segments. What's your viewpoint on it? Do you think BYU should have brought in a quarterback that could have competed during spring and maybe a JC guy? Or do you like this this return of Christian Stewart showing the offense or giving the offense and defense probably the best look that they can get?
Yeah, that's it right there. I don't think it's a matter of like or dislike as much as a matter of I think, why not? It does give you someone that will get every ball downfield that needs to get, that needs to be down there without having to settle, and that's just the way it is. I mean, you realize that your top three guys aren't ready right now, aren't available to you right now. So what do you do? Do you bring in a number four or a number five just to be a guy that can help you in spring? And how much can he really help you if he's just coming in fresh to be nothing but a bench sitter in the fall? I think Robert and I addressed that pretty early in camp, saying what kind of guy do you get when you bring that guy in? That's not the kind of guy we need for this program. So I credit the ingenuity and thankful that from a BYU perspective that Christian saw fit to be able to come and help out, because again, it gives everyone the best possible look. I got no problem with it.
Greg Rebell, the professional, the voice, the Canuck of the BYU Cougars on the Cougar IMG Sports Network. That's what he has to say. Greg, we appreciate you so much. Thanks for coming on with us.
Well, Ben, I thank you, and it seems like lately when I hop on with you, it's Darnell by your side, which is always a pleasure for me. And so, Darnell, good to speak with you again, and we'll do it again soon, I'm sure.
All right, Greg. Have fun with soccer, too, all right?
That's been a blast, too. Absolutely. Thanks, guys.